My name is Luke. I actually run this church. No, I'm joking. But Armu's not here for the weekend. He sends his greetings. He's in a Hermanus for the weekend, and he's busy facilitating an encounter for. So basically what's happened is our church, it's been recognized that we do encounter for. So encounter for, just for those of you who don't know, it's like deliverance worship. It's basically just a whole weekend of worship, and we trust that God comes and delivers people of things that they struggle with, things that they're addicted to. But so it's sort of recognized that our church we're doing something really good, and so some other churches have asked if Armu can come to their church, this one being the Hermanus Church, Shofar Hermanus, to come and facilitate and counter for and teach them what we're doing. So that's quite exciting. Also, awesome opportunity for Armu. So he left me in charge of today. And he asked me to talk about one of the hardest topics. I think you can ask Lizette or Monica. This week was a tough week, trying to figure out how to do this sermon. He came to me 2 weeks ago and said, Luke, I want you to talk about biblical financial advice. And okay, gosh, wow. It's funny that he asked me to do that when he's not here, so I can take all the shots. So just a disclaimer, I don't want any emails in the morning, okay? You can send them to Armu, that's fine. But money is a sensitive topic in the church, and for many different reasons. There's people that have money, and there's people that don't have money. There's people that are struggling financially, the people that aren't struggling financially. And where do we see the line between what God can do and what God cannot do? Because ultimately that defines what we find sensitive about money and what we don't find sensitive about money. If we understand that God can come into every aspect of our finances, then we know that money is not a tricky topic. It's an amazing topic. But sometimes when we don't believe that God can come and do a work in our finances, I find that that's when things ultimately fall apart. And so today, what I want to talk about is more actually what my father has taught me over the years. And I titled this the Sermon of Father's Inheritance very specifically because my father's inheritance for me is not the things that he can give me when he dies. The inheritance my father has given me is the tools to use money for my benefit, to see money as a tool, the lessons that he taught me to manage my finances. So there's a couple of base things, but ultimately the scripture, one of my dad's favorite scriptures is Proverbs 13:22, and it says this: a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. And my father's sort of, if I can say, sum it up in one overriding principle, my father's principle for finances is that my finances are not for me, they are for my children. I do not manage my finances for myself. I manage my finances for my children. And I will teach my children to manage their finances for their children, etc., etc. And this is the idea that I want to leave with you. So I'm gonna talk to about a few principles that my father talking. But what I really want to get down to today is that good, sound, biblical advice. And I could reference a whole lot of scriptures, but I'm not going to do that. Good, sound, biblical advice in terms of finances is that our finances are for our children. So my wife is pregnant. Hey, Liffy. And it will be our first child. And what I'm thinking about these days is how on earth am I going to have enough money for my kid, you know? I love it when people come and start talking to me and they're like, yeah, you know, yes, nappies are expensive, eh? And they go, and children, yes, man, they poop a lot. And, schooling, that's also expensive. So better start saving up for that, Luke. And those conversations freak me out, I'm not going to lie. And but there's something that my father taught me, and that was that if my finances are for one thing, it is for those things. It's not for the car that I'm trying to finance or not finance, not for the house I'm trying to finance, not for the, it's not the TV I'm trying to buy or the holiday I'm trying to go on to, but the point of my finances is for my kid. And that takes first priority. And that's what my father taught me. So my father gave me, his five steps to 90% of any financial advice you'll hear is first off, tithe. Tithing was not an option in my family. Tithing was a way of life. That's how we did things. We tithed. And there's a lot of debate whether or not, you know, tithing is New Testament or if it's Old Testament. But what I can say is that we learned to tithe and we saw financial blessings in our household. That's what I can say. And there's a long debate about that, but I don't want to get into it. Invest wisely. And this isn't necessarily money, but this is also time. So my dad's sort of philosophy on investing wisely was that which you spend your time on is that which you truly invest in. So if you see your kids as being a priority, that is where you invest. Not just financially, but with your time. Right? Saving, staying out of debt, living within your means. My father taught me that wealth is generated when you learn to live within your means as your income increases. So as your income increases, your expenses should try and stay the same. So there were these awesome sort of tips for making money. But what I want to talk about is three principles that sort of that any of these can fit into. Three principles that my father lived his life, and it wasn't just in terms of finances, but the it was based on the decisions that he made about our family, based on where we will be going, what will we be doing, what will we believe, what are the values that we as a family hold. So, number one, in my family, it was a spirit of being teachable. My father would say, this is directly from my father, he'd say, a man that is not teachable is a man that has outgrown his usefulness. And when it comes to finances, with it being a tricky situation, with it being a tricky subject, it requires a teachable spirit. It requires somebody to say, you know, I don't have all the answers. I am struggling with my finances. Teach me. I don't know what I'm doing. Things aren't adding up at the end of the month. My father gave me a book to read called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. I think that's how you pronounce it. If I can recommend this book, please get hold of it. It's a fantastic book. But he said in this book, intelligence solves problems and produces money. Money without financial intelligence is money soon gone. Our culture is that when we come to financial difficulties, money solves the problem. Money does not solve the problem. Financial intelligence solves problems. Financial intelligence comes from being teachable. If finances aren't working, you can learn how to manage finances well. If there isn't money, you can learn to generate more income. But the problem that we have is that, and this is something that I'm starting to realize, when I was a kid, I looked at my adult parents and I thought, wow, they know everything, they're adults. And as I'm becoming an adult, I realize we're all just trying to juggle balls in the air, but we really don't know what we're doing, you know. Well, I don't know how you feel. That's how I feel sometimes. Just got to keep up appearances, you know, smile and wave. Hey, I'm an adult. I know what I'm doing. I'm not freaked out by the fact I've got a baby. Yay! Okay. Awesome. But it requires me to have a teachable spirit. It requires me to go to Armo and say, Armo, how much should I budget per month for my kid? Armo, what is, if you've got so much money, what do you first prioritize when it comes to your kids? Armo, I don't know what I'm doing, or not just Armo. But the point is, go and ask questions. Be teachable. Understand that it's okay not to know everything about finances. And my dad would say that he doesn't know anything about finance. In fact, if you go and ask him about anything, he'd probably give you like a 3-page essay on why he doesn't know anything about finances, which is quite ironic. Anyway, but be teachable. Be willing to learn. Ask for help. And the most important thing is that wealth is not money. Wealth is what you know. Okay? And this is something that Zimbabwe learned the hard way when they chased out all the white farmers. They got all the land, they got all the money, and the whole country collapsed economically because the wealth of the farmers was in what they know and the skills that they had, not in the possessions that they had. And I just want to encourage you, if you feel that, you know, finances aren't going well, if you're struggling, it's not about the money that you have in your account. Money does not solve financial issues. Intelligence, learning solves financial issues. If you have the ability to learn, you have all the wealth you need. Okay. Number two, money is either your servant or you are its servant. Another one of my dad's favorite scriptures, 2 Peter 2 verse 19, for whatever overcomes a person, to that he is enslaved. And money is one of those topics. I mean, you think of a classic example, drugs. Man is a slave to drugs or pornography or something like that. But money, specifically the fear of money or the stress about money, or worrying about money, we become more enslaved to that than, you know, than money becomes our tool. Money is a tool. It is a fantastic tool. It is a biblical tool. And we mustn't say that, you know, Christians are meant to be poor. We're not meant to be poor. We're meant to bless the world and to be a blessing to the world. Isaiah 54, verse 2 to 3, I just paraphrased it here. But it says, enlarge the place of your tent, for you will spread abroad, and your offspring will possess the nations. But in my house, we understood that money was generated not for us, but to be a blessing to others. My parents understood that generating money was not for them, but for their kids. We as a family understood that generating money was not for us, but to be a blessing to other people, to help other people in need, to bless the church where we can, to bless the community where we're in, to bless our friends where we can. And once again, this isn't necessarily about finances. This is also about time. This is also about possessions. This is also about scripture. This is also about prayer. But we understand that we generate wealth, spiritual wealth, financial wealth, to bless other people. I come to church not to get for myself. I come to church so I can learn something so I can bless somebody else. It's a simple example. I don't do praise and worship so I can feel good about myself and check off the serving list. I do praise and worship so I can bless the church and praise and worship. Do you understand where I'm getting it? And money is no different. We need to repent of being scared of it because God has given to us as a fantastic tool. The last one is, and this is sort of ties in with our theme for this month, because we're talking about being generous, and that was also something that my parents learned. The way that you can test whether or not you are the master of money, or your money is the master of you, is how generous you can be. And once again, this isn't finances. This is just but a principle in my house that my father taught me is that the more you give, the more you have to give. It's funny how it works. It's completely counterintuitive. And my father's theory about tithing was, and he'd say, he doesn't care what people have to say, whether tithing is New Testament or Old Testament, but what he knows is that the more money he gives away, the more money he gets. It's a counterintuitive, upside-down, kingdom principle thinking. That the money that we have, the more we give it away, the more God blesses us with us. Another one of my dad's favorite scriptures, Luke 6, verse 38. Given, it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put in your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be given back to you. And in my house, when we grew up, it was very commonplace to have strangers living in our house. People that my dad, my mother, you know, she nearly had a headache. Well, no, she did have a headache. She nearly murdered my dad from the amount of times he picked up random people and they must stay in our house for a week or so. But my dad understood that when he got a house, he got a house to bless people. When he got money, he got money to bless people. When he got a car, he got a car so he can pick up hitchhikers and give them a lift, which, you know, might get you murdered today. But anyway, it's fine. But this is the family that we lived in, that we understood that we got stuff to bless people. My father grew up in the slums of Maputo. He's Portuguese, and he grew up in the squatter camps around Maputo. And when he was 4 or 5, they moved to South Africa because of the civil war that broke out in Mozambique. And my father was the youngest of 11, so he lived in extreme poverty. And when he was 16, he had decided, and at the age of 16, all his siblings had run away from home. He's the only one in his family out of 11 kids to have finished high school or to have gotten a degree in university. But he decided when he was 16 that he was never going to be poor again in his life. And he wasn't a Christian at that point, but he finished school, he went to the army, did his community service years or whatever they called it back then, and started studying. And that's when he met my mother. And my mother was a Christian, and everything went well until my dad got my mother pregnant before they got married. And they got married because, you know, there was a baby on the way. And in that process, there was an amazing missionary couple that took my parents in and discipled them and taught my dad about living for the next generation. It was an amazing story. My dad got saved, and we grew up as a Christian household. And both my brother and myself, we were discipled through salvation and baptism by my father, taught us tools to use our finances for the glory of God's kingdom. But my father will say to you that his success is not because of the fact that he worked hard and he brought himself there. His success is down to the people that supported him when he had nothing. When he had hit rock bottom, his success today and the success of his children is dependent on the people that supported it. The people that said, this is my money, I'm giving it to you so that I can invest in you because I believe in you. I believe in your family. I believe in your ability to generate spiritual wealth, financial wealth, for the sake of your children, for the sake of the generations, for the sake of the community. And for my father, that is the reason why we give. It's because he understands that somebody that cannot give has forgotten what God has done for them. That's really what it boils down to. It's somebody that cannot believe that God can intervene. And that's a tough one, because money is real. We talk about spiritual things, and sometimes it's a bit up in the air. And, before I became a Christian, I used to think of spiritual things as, you know, it's over there, and it does stuff, but I can carry on with my life, and it won't bother me. And people can live that way. It's fine. You see Christians and non-Christians that are successful in terms of their finances. We can live ignoring the spiritual, but money is very real. Without money, you go hungry, you know. But we understand that there's no such thing as a self-made man. That is a concept that does not exist. And anybody that does say that has forgotten where they've come from. And so what I want to leave with you today, because this is going to be short and sweet, but is a challenge that when we do finances, we live for the next generation. That's what I'm thinking about when my son is coming at the end of January. How will I invest today so that my children's children will have an inheritance? The last slide, there's a picture of my house that we bought last year with the help of my father. I want to tell you a story about this house because it's quite significant in terms of where, you know, we've come from, that being my wife and I, Monica and I. About 5 years ago, I started working for Shofar Church, and my father did not like that because working for a church does not generate wealth. So he cut me off completely financially and in other ways as well. And I'd like to say that I was the victim, but I was not very mature either. So I threw a few tantrums, and basically my dad and I did not talk to each other for a year and a half because I went into ministry. My father is a Bible-believing Christian, but somewhere along the lines in the last couple of years, the fear of poverty had come upon him, and he had forgot, you know, where his money had come from. But it was a very cool story, which I'm getting to now. But so we didn't talk to each other a year and a half. The day that I did talk to my dad was when I told him I got engaged. Hey, Dad, how's it going? I'm engaged. Woo! But what I realized is that in that first conversation I had with my dad, the first thing that he says to me is, Luke, I'm proud of you. And anything you need, I'll support you. And both of us were so stubborn that we knew what we had done wrong. We knew we wanted to reconcile and talk to each other. But, you know, we were just very stubborn. So we didn't. And we both realized that, you know, if we sort of the same principles that my dad had taught me, you know, we had forgotten, was that, you know, we live for the next generation. We don't live for ourselves. My money comes from God. My wealth comes from God. You know? Anyway, so Monica and I got married. I'd moved to George about a year before that, before we got married. So I've been sort of supporting myself financially for 2.5 years by that time. And when I moved to George, I almost said, you know, I'll give you R1,000 a month and a bedroom. So that was like, yay, I'm going to get married. And but funny enough, the things that got me through those times were the principles that my dad taught me about finances, you know, and challenging myself to be generous with R1,000, not just be generous with paying my tithe, but after I've paid my tithe, how am I going to be generous with my money for other people, you know, those sort of things. Anyway, so this sort of culminated in a conversation that my dad and I had last year, June, July. Monica and I, we felt that God said that we must buy property for the sake of the student ministry. We were having a lot of success with students, you know, but everything was done with coffee dates outside of our house. And we felt that we need to get people into our space. We need to get them to come live with us. They must come care with us. They must stay the night. They must live with us for a year or whatever. That's what we felt. So we started to look around and we started to go to the banks and see what loans we can kind of get. And we were looking to buy a 2-bedroom flat. And then my dad and I had a conversation last year, June, and he said to me, you know, Luke, I pay my tithe every month and I support a lot of my friends in ministry. And I feel that how can I support my friends in ministry if I don't even support my own son in ministry? And I'd not told him about the fact that we wanted to buy property because we were still building on our relationship. But my father had come to the conclusion that, you know, and he had seen me being able to manage my finances. And I told them that I'm managing my finances by the principles you taught me. These are things you taught me. It's your fault, you know. And he came to the conclusion. He said, how can I support other people's ministry? I believe in their ministry. How can I not believe in my son's ministry? Because the inheritance that he had given me was not money. It was the principles and the things that he had taught me to manage my finances, to use my money as a tool. And so my father proposed that he wanted to help us buy a house, which is that picture that you see up there. And not only did he want to help us buy a house, but he wanted to help us renovate it. And, you know, a brand new house for the sake of our ministry, for the sake of investing into what we're doing here in George. And that's what I want to do for my son one day. I want to put my money where my mouth is. I want to say, yes, son, I believe in you. Not only do I believe in you, I'm going to invest in you. Because I believe in your potential. I believe in your ability to reach this community. I believe in your ability to change the world.